This is the first in a five-part series on the life of Florence Nightingale. Born in 1820 into an aristocratic family, Florence Nightingale soon found herself at odds with her station in life, the expected role of a proper British lady, and the desires of her parents. Nonetheless, she held true to her ambitious vision of becoming a nurse. Every age produces its healers. Indeed, healing is the exalted extension of the uniquely human impulse to love and to nurture. On rare occasions, the lives of certain individuals change the course of history. Florence Nightingale was such an individual. Born in 1820, of aristocratic British parents, Florence Nightingale received the finest education of her day. Exposure to travel, works of art, learning foreign languages. From an early age, Florence Nightingale expressed an interest in social issues, concern for the poor, the sick, the disadvantaged, all of which led to her interest in nursing as a career. Her parents objected to this prospect due to the terrible conditions of the hospitals of her day, as well as the low status of nurses determined by their menial duties and unsavory reputations. Her parents hoped that she would simply give up her ambitions, marry, have children, and continue in the social circles to which she was accustomed. But Florence Nightingale was called to a higher purpose. And because of her life, the history of nursing was forever changed. Her ideas were without precedent during her lifetime, yet they continue to ring fresh and true for us today. So let us listen as Florence Nightingale tells her story in her own words.
I was always uncomfortable with the social practices of British gentry. From the time I was a young child, even look peering out of the window beyond the walls that surrounded my home. When my eyes lay upon the vision of the aged, of the poor, of children who were lost and ill. From those moments, I questioned whether members of this aristocratic class of which I was born, have we done anything I thought of universal importance? this kind of questioning, or was not looked at, nor looked upon as if it was normal for a young lady to be thinking of these things. But from the time of my youth, my father instilled in Parthenope and I an intellectual prowess and curiosity that was rare even for a young man of the time. It wasn't unusual in the evening after dinner that my father might ask some question that would result in the dinner table being piled high with books, and us spending hours peering into them with great curiosity. Curiosity that would result in our often forgetting the question that had been asked. At a young age of 6, I remember realizing that I was to live a life of charitable service, and then all through my youth. That was on my mind, but it was at the age of 17 that God first spoke to me, and I knew that I had a mission that was going to be challenging not only to me, but indeed to my family. When I announced to my parents that I wanted to be a nurse, one would have thought that I said something quite different. My sister Parthenope started having fainting spells, and my mother accused me of wanting to be promiscuous. Now, such accusations might seem to you to be appalling, but indeed, considering that nursing was a profession of unskilled labor, one that it was thought the only qualifications of which a woman had to have survived a broken love affair or be qualified to do nothing else, perhaps their concerns were of merit. But my interest was in taking care of those in need. Women of the time, you must remember, had power only vested by virtue of that of their father, or that of the husband that they were to marry, who was to be exactly like their father. Now, marriage had some appeal to me. But when I was tempted to take it seriously, I thought of the reality that if I did marry, all of my individual potential would be sacrificed for the opinions and interests of the man who was to be my husband. And in the privacy, in the sacred moment of my own thinking, to me, that was like suicide. So my pursuit was to become a nurse. And indeed, I was relentless. Anyone who was to come to my home, I would take them aside and tell them of my interest, often being met with polite curiosity, if not disapproval. But then, after years of seeking some way, some opening in which I could negotiate with my father, I finally spoke to Julia Ward Howe and her husband, Dr. Howe, for whom I had the greatest respect. I said to him, in a moment when it was just the three of us in his study, I said, "Is it true, Dr. Howe, that it is indeed unsuitable for me, for a woman of my parentage. To live a life of charitable service, to become a nurse, is it indeed unsuitable, I asked. And I shan't forget. He took his pipe in his left hand and took a long, thoughtful draw. And then he looked at me. And he said, "My dear Florence, at this time in Britain, anything that is unusual, which it is indeed thought of as unsuitable." But then he went on to say, that if that is what I was meaning to do from my heart, how unsuitable could it be to live a life in service to others? And he pressed upon me to go forward. "Go forward, dear Florence," he said. "Follow your heart and do what you must." And with that, my life did change.
This concludes part one of Florence Nightingale in her own words. Continue with part two, in which Florence Nightingale's nursing expertise is first recognized by the British government.